Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Saturday, March 7th, 2026. It's a warm and spring-like day here in Nashville, with a threat of strong rain this afternoon. We have daffodils blooming here and redbud trees just starting to peek out. The arugula we planted last week has germinated and is up. For today's episode, we have a little bit of a change of pace. Do you have Irish heritage? Is a trip to Ireland in your travel plans? I've always been fascinated with Ireland, and thanks to my grandmother Regina and her cousin Catherine, I've been aware that the origins of the family were in County Cavan and in County Laois. They left us with their handwritten recorded recollections of the family history. Now with umpteenth generation Xerox copies, these recollections have proven out to be mostly accurate when tested by available records and now DNA matches. I feel particularly grateful knowing about these places of origin because it has made our visits to Ireland especially meaningful. We have certainly visited the popular tourist venues of Ireland, but it is the visits to the off-the-beaten-path places which are especially memorable. So today, my guest is Jonathan Smith, who is a researcher of Irish heritage at the Cavan Library. He is an author and journalist. His book, Faith, Hope, and Endurance, Selected Tales of the Cavan Diaspora, tells about people who originated in Cavan and who have made interesting contributions all over the world. And so, I hope you'll enjoy my conversation with Jonathan about his work and some tips on how to make your travel to Ireland a notch more meaningful. And we will get started right after this short message.
Hi, this is Heather Loos, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Jonathan Smith, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's a pleasure to join you.
Jonathan, as we chatted prior to going on the record here, it's a pleasure to get to meet you, and I've looked forward to this conversation. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you very much, and likewise.
Thank you. Let me just set this up for our listeners. It is noon here in Nashville, and it's 6 o'clock p.m. in Ireland. You are in what locality in Ireland?
I'm in County Cavan, which is in the northern part.
Right. Are you in Cavan Town, or are you in one of the surrounding
towns? I'm in one of the regional towns, Cootill.
Cootill. Okay. And I take it, Jonathan, we're going to talk about your life and your vocation there as a historian there in County Cavan. But I really do want my listeners to hear a little bit about you and your background as we get started. You're a native of Cavan?
I am. I'm from Cootill. I was born in Drogheda, but my family ties are all in Cootill, where I grew up on a family farm, so lots of outdoor and cattle and that type of thing. So it was great way of life growing up. And my current job is I am studies librarian at with Cavan Library, and I've also written a number of books, and I've been a columnist with the Anglo-Celt newspaper for 11 years, writing a historical column weekly, 52 weeks a year.
That's fantastic. Now, the Anglo-Celt is a local newspaper there in Cavan, and I guess Monaghan is part of its
It is indeed, well. Yeah. It's actually kind of, well, it would have covered Monaghan in years gone by and other counties. And then it kind of focused, about 20 years ago, began to focus solely more or less on Cavan.
Okay.
And then the Monaghan paper folded there recently, so it's gone back into covering Monaghan again.
Oh, I see. I didn't understand that. So for folks who are in America, the Anglo-Celt is a wonderful little newspaper that you can read online, and they also have a Facebook and Instagram pages that you can follow and keep up with things that are going on in that part of Ireland. Tell us about your educational background, Jonathan.
Well, go back to the very young days. I was educated locally in the Darley School in Coot Hill, and I suppose we had very excellent teachers, and they kind of nourished our imagination, and that's sort of also been a very useful thing as I've got older and gone to writing, and that you're able to. Your education definitely informs what you do. And secondary education was in Dundalk, Dundalk Grammar School. And then third level was in Liverpool. I went to Liverpool, which, of course, is the great port city where a lot of immigrants headed off from Liverpool to America. It's a fascinating place to be. And I studied librarianship there, so I did.
Okay.
And that was that's kind of where my current job has taken me, really.
So I wondered if your educational background was in library science or in history.
My education background was in library management.
Right. Well, that really sets you up though for doing the research and that sort of thing.
Well, yes, I suppose we. But if when we were writing thesis or that, everything is documented. And I suppose I've always taken the view with history has been something that's fascinated me from childhood. My mother would have been a historian. She graduated from Trinity College, and we always were told stories. We were told the background to everything growing up, and that's kind of informed a lot of, of what I do as well, that you kind of lift the lid on things. But when you're telling the story, especially if it's for a scholarly journal like the Breffni Historical Society Journal, you want to have it, your approach is to make it as honest as possible, using the available sources, whether it's primary, secondary, and or interviews, newspapers or whatever. You want to make it as honest and correct as possible. And I suppose when you come to your columns, the column I do for the newspaper, you're allowed, a little bit of leeway in that you're broadening it out a little bit, and maybe you're giving an account of a region, and you're giving the story, but you're also telling it, maybe you can your style of telling it may be slightly more informal, perhaps. It's actually, just to mention those columns, a lot of them have covered people who've gone abroad, gone to America as well, and some fascinating people from our neck of the woods who've done all sorts of interesting things out in the States, But
so your column, as I have recall, is a standing headline called Times Past. Am I right about that?
That is correct. Times past. So right. I suppose that could cover a multitude. You can sort of cover a variety of topics.
Right.
So I've done everything from medicines in times past to the diaspora. The diaspora is one that I particularly like to focus on, because I think we like to hear what happened to those people who left, they went away. How did they do? So some of those stories I've been able to tell were people who maybe people who did very well, and then there were people who were maybe you probably wouldn't want to hear about in everyday life that didn't do well, but they maybe broke a few rules or whatever,
they're stories nonetheless. Absolutely,
they're fascinating. There was one particular one about a guy who he kind of wasn't trusted around the wives of his friends, and he was a Henry Morton, and he went out to Paris, and he met up with an old friend, and took up with his friend's wife behind his back, and the friend almost had him killed, chasing him down the stairs with a carving knife. he was one of our less sort of acclaimed.
I first became aware of you, Jonathan. It's been 2 or 3 years ago when your book, which is entitled "Faith, Hard Work, and Endurance,"
that's correct,
with the subtitle "Selected Tales of the Cavan Diaspora," was published, and I obtained a copy of that from the library there in Cavan. Purchased a copy, and it has, I guess, over 100 stories of folks from Cavan that traveled to other parts of the world, Canada, U.S., I guess Australia, and the stories that you relay about them, and some rather important people, and others just sort of common folk, but with interesting stories.
That's correct.
Right.
I mean, like, there's one particular character there, William Brady. He was born in the townland of Cullies. Townland is like a regional sort of, when I'm telling people townlands, they're not always familiar with what I'm talking about. It's not actually a town. So you have like a patchwork quilt, and imagine each patch is like an area or region of land. Mm-hmm. So in former times, rather than postal codes, you could say we each area was named a different name. And this part of Cavan was known as Cullies. It's just outside Cavan town. And a man named William Brady came from there. He went out to New Mexico. He joined the United States Army. And then during the Lincoln County Wars, he was a sheriff, serving sheriff, but he came a cropper against Billy the Kid's gang, and he was murdered. But this William Brady is depicted in a famous John Wayne movie, Chisholm. The Sheriff Brady in that movie, and that's based on
William excellent Brady story. Excellent story. And there's also the famous Civil War hero Patrick O'Rourke, who was a I guess a hero in the Gettysburg.
He was I suppose associated with Rochester, so he was. There's a famous, actually, there was a lot of interest in the last few years. There was talk of building a bridge. I think there was a bridge built, wasn't there, in his honour, in honour of O'Rourke. But I have some information in front of me here. I'm just looking. There was the name escapes me, but in County Cavan, there was a stone placed to commemorate his birthplace. So there was, a Cornafane, that was the area, okay. Not too far from County Cavan. And I'm just checking it. But I suppose he's a folk hero in a sense, I suppose. Like, and Monroe County would be his sort of territory that he's associated
in,
with.
In the state of New York.
Yes, that's correct. Yes. Mm-hmm. Rochester City would be the area that he's kind of celebrated most, I suppose. And they say also there's he's commemorated by a monument at Little Round Top,
which is right there in the Gettysburg,
yes,
battlefield,
yes,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
I should tell you, you're aware because we've corresponded previously, that yes. that my Cavan connection is with the Conway family.
Oh yes, yes.
And yeah. and the mm-hmm. they were last in mm-hmm. the little village of Ballyjamesduff in the townland there, Castillarahan.
Yes,
adjacent
yes.
to mm-hmm. adjacent to Ballyjamesduff. But I mention that in connection with Gettysburg because. Growing up, my father had a friend. In fact, this fellow was his best man at his wedding, whose name was Conway. We knew him as Red. His name was Martin. Mm. But Martin became a ranger with the United States Park Service.
And
was a historian, and in fact was the park historian at Gettysburg.
Very
and as a child, I guess I was in the seventh or eighth grade, 11 years old, 10, 11, 12 years old. We got toured around the Gettysburg battlefield, which was an incredibly powerful place to go and see by a man named Conway. So it was so much fun.
Fascinating, yeah.
And I have researched to see if he was kin to R. Conway, and I can't find that he's connected to us by kinship, but by friendship certainly.
And you know that's one of the places that I would have on my list. See,
absolutely a treasure of a place to go, and. You know, the Irish figured strong in the U.S. Civil War. Many Irish who had immigrated in the 1850s, 1840s, and 1850s were then conscripted into the U.S. Army and fought bravely for the U.S. Union for the most part.
I don't know if you can see behind me, there's a picture on the wall. I don't know if
I do see. That's, a man on horseback.
That's General Philip Henry Sheridan.
Philip Sheridan, exactly.
And the reason I have that on my wall is actually my mother bought it at auction back in the 80s, and the glass had been broken in it, and I asked her, I said, you know, could I have it? You know, so I got the glass repaired, and I have it behind me. But it's been hung in our hall for years. I know he can be times controversial, I guess.
I suppose
regarding the Native American, that there is a certain controversy there. So it's just mainly, I suppose, my curiosity is the Cavan connection, really. Although,
that's exactly right.
As one historian put it, where was he born? People say, oh, Cavan, others, well, definitely no birth certificate has been found. And so they came to the conclusion, you know, he was born at sea.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Now, was that true or not? We're not sure. Well,
but there's no
record either side of the Atlantic to say where he was born. And that's stubbed his chances of becoming president or running for president.
Interesting.
He attempted to run, and because they couldn't prove the location of birth.
Family lore in my family has us connected to him as a cousin of some sort, but I have never been able to work that out. The closest I've come to that is that in the 1920 census in Wilkes-Barre, living in the household with my Conway family was a fellow named Sheridan. Unexplained as why he was there, and I've never been able to pinpoint exactly why he was there or what connection he had to the family, although I have tried because I think that's a clue. But Sheridan is well known. Let me just diverge a second and say this: you've also written a new book about the the railway station in Coot Hill, in the northern part of Cavan, and historical memories about that. And that's just come out here in the last month or two.
That just come out there just around Christmas there,
right.
It was a book that was kind of years in the making. Like, there's a lot of stories gathered up from family members. I suppose going back, the stories are going back 100 years in some cases, and they're a mixture of anecdotal as well as the working life of the stationery to illustrate that, and also like records of those who worked there. And it really, I suppose, the book was almost complete in 2013, and at the time my wife became ill, and the project got shelved. Coot Hill was 300 years old, the town I live in, last year, and someone approached me and said, would you ever think of finishing that book? So got it finished, and it's run out the door. I have never done a book which is sold so quickly. But everybody liked the fact that it brought the station to life, the people who worked there, and what the importance of the station was to the hinterland, and for import and export of goods were made more efficient, people travelled further and that type of thing. And my great-grandfather, he was one of the station masters there. He arrived from Enniskillen in 1915, and his family lived in the station house. He had six children, and they lived there. And so he was there till 1931. He's actually one of the longest station masters. They normally stayed 3 or 4 years and they moved on, but he was there 15 years.
It's fantastic to have that recorded recollection. I guess for the listeners that may not be familiar, there's currently no rail service, passenger rail service to Cavan, at Coot Hill or even Cavan Town. But I suppose that is something that they're still thinking about bringing back. Am I right about that?
There's all sorts of talk. Like, there's various projects to develop the rail infrastructure again, and there is hope of getting some form of a link, possibly even to Cavan Town, maybe onwards. But while some areas have come to fruition, in other parts of the country that they have reinstated rail, we're still waiting at the moment. It would give us a hell of a boost if we got a railway back.
Well, I'm going to try to post, as I post this podcast on the website, I'm going to try to post a link to where these books that you've written might be available to our listeners, so that should they would like to see these books or look into them further, they can. Let me say this now. I guess about 10 or 15% of American citizens have Irish heritage, and that's really a lot, and it's stronger than that in places like Chicago and Boston and New York.
And there's some major folk. Like, there was Charlie, have you heard of Charlie Comiskey?
In Chicago, the Comiskey.
Comiskey, yes. Sorry, yeah.
Comiskey.
We've our own. Comiskey. Yeah, we probably it's just our. You've your way of pronouncing it, and we probably say like potato and patata.
Well, he's a major Chicago figure, if I'm getting the right yes. character.
He was involved with basketball. His father was from Cavan. is
for and there's the Comiskey Park in Chicago, which is the a baseball venue.
His dad came from Crusherlock in County Cavan.
No kidding. Yeah, so interesting. Yes,
And yeah, he definitely was one of the better known folk, wasn't he? Really?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Can I give you another story? Now, this is Frank Haig. Have you heard of Frank Haig?
Tell me.
He was Frank Haig was a fascinating character. His ancestors in Cavan, basically, you had William Haig was an architect who was very, very well known for his churches and those type of buildings. But Frank went to Frank's family. Well, Frank's of Cavan descent, and he was known as the Boss of New Jersey. And he once famously announced when somebody challenged him about that the law wouldn't approve of what he was doing, and he says, "I am the law." And apparently people would call into him, and they would he had a famous wooden desk. I think the desk is preserved now. I think it's kind of like a historical item. And it had a drawer which would push out your side, and you put the envelope into it, and it pulled through, and he'd take the envelope out the other side. But he's quite a some people,
oh man.
Some people feared him, and other people viewed him as a modern-day Robin Hood.
Exactly, exactly.
Fascinating character. But he's in the book, so he's in that Faith, Hard Work, and Endurance.
Jonathan, let me ask you this. You know, there are many of us over here on this side of the ocean have become aware of our Irish heritage, and maybe have known about it all our lives, and we're planning a trip to Ireland and would like to have that trip be meaningful. You know, many American folks travel there in my observation and visit Dublin, Cork, Galway, go to the bars where the traditional music is played, and that's wonderful. They go to the Cliffs of Moher and they kiss the Blarney Stone, and they do the rounds, the Ring of Kerry, and all the beautiful places to see, and they're wonderful to see, but never have a clue about their own particular homeland, which may be in a rural county like Cavan. Mm-hmm. In my visits to Ireland, I have visited Cavan a couple times, and rarely ever seen another American there. Now that obviously I don't know how many Americans visit there, but I found it to be incredibly meaningful to visit there. Do you have thoughts or advice to potential American tourists about how they might dig into their Irish roots and make those trips a little more meaningful?
Well. Firstly, I think if you have an idea where locality they may be from or what county, first thing I would definitely suggest is that they you get on the net, I suppose, and find the county library in that area, like, for example, like where I am, County Cavan, at the Cavan Library Service, and get in touch. If it's a general email and give your details of your family, the genealogy research, or whatever what your interest is, and perhaps to try and locate the location where your family lived, and by doing that, you'll either be, like in our case, you either be the library will handle that, or will give you more information on like visiting the library, and you can sort of arrange appointments to go into the library, perhaps do further research, or to visit a genealogy centre like Cavan Genealogy Centre, or to consult Roots Ireland, which is online, And I would definitely visit the library and make arrangements to do that. And they would be very helpful. Libraries are extremely helpful. They only love to have people coming in, and they're giving. They
That's
want
right.
you to know the information. This
That's right.
information is there. It's like unlocking. It's like a key to unlock the past. You're opening. It's like a treasure chest that's been locked, and you can open
Exactly.
that and find the information. Now, for people, I've seen people who've come in from abroad, from America, from Canada, from wherever. And the thing is, it's the experience of walking the land that you have come, your ancestors have come from, being able to set foot on it and breathe the air and say, this is where they came from. Or to go out and visit the sites. Perhaps there's a house still there. Perhaps there's a descendant from some of the remaining family. It's a fascinating adventure. And the thing is, the people in the libraries and the genealogy centres, they'll be able to pinpoint the resources that may open up further avenues for you. But you should also, I'm not saying that you don't do the bars and the city visits and that,
Exactly.
but definitely incorporate, include the visit to the towns, and the smaller areas, and find out where the family were from. And but definitely you'll find that the libraries will also may send you links, websites, and other details to help you with your visit. Especially like there's a great site website. This is Cavan. This is cavan.ie, and it will provide further local resources in the area, things that you can do, places you can visit. And there's so much more. I suppose you can only touch the tip of the iceberg, like talking about it. Like there's so much more to see in the county. And Cavan itself, our county is known as it's a lakeland county, 365 lakes. Definitely, I'd recommend that you contact the library and try and contact the local studies librarian, and they will give you feedback on what to do, and making appointments, and how to perhaps maximize your visit, your time there, to get the most out of it,
We had planned a trip to Cavan
Yeah.
and began to follow on the social media the different pages that are available from the Anglo-Celt, for example, and the This Is Cavan website. And we learned that there was going to be an arts festival in Cavan Town during the time that we were there. And had we not been paying attention, we would have missed it totally. But it was a remarkably fun event to go to at the little city park there in Cavan Town. And just to get a taste of what's going on in the local culture is so active. And so interesting.
We had a fascinating event there in 2024. He was a diaspora type character. He was a general, Owen Rua O'Neill, which Rua is red in Gaelic Irish. And he was one of the people who was part of the Flight of the Earls, one of the that those descendants. And he came back from Spain, and he led the Irish, the Native Irish, against the English during the Confederate Wars in the 1640s. And he died in 1649. And there was a celebration just to mark the 375th year of his death, which was held in the library. This famous Irish general he's buried in St. Mary's Abbey, which is an old abbey in was graveyard in Cavan Town. And there's only actually the tower is the only remaining portion of it, but there's a lot of
Right in
excavation work like
downtown,
that. Yeah, Right. And very famous. You should look him up on Google or whatever search engine. And Owen Roe O'Neill is how he's known. But there was a fascinating series of lectures which are going to go online now from the library perspective shortly.
And let me ask you this question. You've talked about the flight of the Earls as if an ordinary American might know what in the world that is. I know what it is because I have read some books that you've suggested to me.
Yes.
But that is an obscure piece of history, but very important in Ireland. Now, I'm not going to ask you to explain that to us here and now, because that would probably take the remainder of our time. But let me ask you this question that's along those lines.
Yes.
What are key facts of Irish history that American tourists should be aware of? Obviously, they should be aware of the famine times. They should be aware of the revolution and the fight for freedom.
The 1916, and then the the establishment of the Free State.
The Free State.
In the 20s. And there were other interesting areas, like there were like groups set up, like the Land Commission, to assess like distribution of land. And often you had maybe the larger landowners had to give away some of their land, which was then given to smaller, as farms, or maybe added to smaller farms. So there's kind of a way, dividing up to make things fair. That was kind of in the 20s. And then 1937, the Irish Constitution, you could also say the when Ireland became a republic in 48 or so, it completely broke off from Britain, and apart from the northern counties, the few counties that remained with Britain, and they're important. And then I suppose when Ireland joined the EEC it's 1973, that radically altered economics in Ireland and investment, and that changed things.
Right.
I suppose in earlier history, how far back, you don't want to go back to the
there's the whole Norman situation of folks coming from what we know as France coming into Ireland and becoming Irish.
Yes, and you've a lot of those names survived down to this day, like Fitzpatrick or Fitzsimons, or Fitz is son of
De Courcy.
All those names. I suppose D would be of Courcy, or
right,
and A lot of those people who they assimilated with the Irish, I suppose, often became more Irish than the Irish themselves. They married into the Irish, and the plantations, of course, I suppose. The old English, they called them, I think, was it the plantation, and they became. The early plantations, they became very much intertwined with the Irish, and then the later plantations were more, I suppose, they didn't assimilate really as much as such. And I suppose a lot of people from families were brought over from Scotland, and land was given to the various settlers, I suppose even
and displacing the native Irish as they did that.
Yes. I suppose when you think of the Cromwellian settlements and that, the land given to the soldiers who as payment for fighting for Cromwell, and the native Irish were, I suppose it was an awful expression, like to hell or to Connacht for a lot of people. and Connacht was like
Western
Waterford's
Ireland.
Bitterland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's so interesting. Americans these days, many of us have done the DNA, the ancestry DNA test, and to try to get an estimate of ethnicity. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes.
Okay. My headphones just went out. To try to get an estimate of ethnicity, and they'll see French and Scandinavian and other aspects that they didn't expect, and that's all part of understanding Irish history.
It's quite a multicultural thing to that. I suppose you had if you go, yes, there were different characters. There was this different Mediterranean influence as well. Mediterranean settlers to
Ireland, Spanish, sure,
Spanish, yes, and then even like a place like Scotland. There were people who went over to Scotland, then they came back and they went over again. And there were, I suppose, people who, like you had the, I suppose, the Vikings or the Danes. And but they do say there's a lot of, there was a big Mediterranean influence, and the Celts, I suppose, really, the Celts, who came in from across Europe and brought their different practices, like you could see a lot of the I suppose, like the artifacts that are found in that. There's actually one thing, that there were amber beads found in County Cavan in the Knockbride area, and they're fascinating, because they would have been brought into the country from abroad. They were like, it was trading, I suppose, but people often wonder, you know, how did such things sort of arrive, like to the country? They were kind of from the Baltic area, so they were, and so there was obviously trade going on. There was a great historian in our county, Tom Barron, and I wrote a book on him, Gentleman and Scholar Thomas James Barron, and he spoke about. He even said that the Romans had been, they hadn't conquered Ireland, but there had been soldiers passing through Ireland, and people kind of laughed at this at the time. But there were cases from time to time where coins, Roman coins, were discovered, and they obviously were, there was some kind of trade going on there. So it wasn't as clear cut. Then sometimes maybe this, like manuscripts discovered with a certain type of material that suggests that they were from, there was a story he had that he believed there was some connection to an Egyptian princess and Ireland. And I never really got to fully explore that, but it is something I will do. And I think they're coming around to thinking that, yes, there was truth in what he was saying. But he was ahead of his time, and people didn't really, you know, they didn't understand that. I think there was some case down the country, I just can't recall the name of the Psalter that was found. I think it had papyrus in it some years back. It's not coming to mind at the minute. But definitely, I think he was onto something there, so he was. Tom was a very astute man. And read widely, and he had he'd studied this area of Knockbride, and this Dr. Anne Ross, who was she was a historian over in Wales. Well, she lived in Wales at the end of her life, towards the end, and I think she'd worked at Southampton University, and she was coming over to Ireland to see these historical sites. Tom Barron had identified this Corlec head. Do you know the head of the three faces?
Yes, I've seen that in the Cavan Historical Society.
Yes, they have a duplicate copy there at the County Museum. But this head was lying in a hay shed, and at times this family would put it out on a wall sometimes. But someone had told Tom Barron back in the 30s, he went to look at it and realised that it was a very important Celtic artefact. And the director of the National Museum at the time was an Adolf Maher, and he drove down, collected the head, and he'd an old bomber jacket he threw over the head to keep it covered when he drove back to Dublin.
To protect it.
But Adolf Maher is a man that you should look at for other reasons. He was an interesting character. But the head went to the museum, and Tom Barron continued to explore the region for years. And they said that he died in 1992, and they said it was in those between 1990 and 1999. They list all these people who contributed a huge amount of artifacts, and he was listed as one of the top contributors, even though he died in 1992. Within those 9 years. But he'd been continually, as things were discovered in the county, he would have them donated to the National Museum. He was a fascinating character, and I suppose inspired by him to kind of read up and learn more myself. But Tom studied the Celtic history of the county, and Dr. Anne Ross had said, she described it as the Glastonbury of Ireland. And Glastonbury, not the music festival, but Glastonbury was associated with, I suppose we don't always say the word pagan, but you could say pagan Bridget or the non-Christian Bridget. And there were often tribes that grew up around her deity, like the cult worship of Bridget. And there was one of those in Glastonbury. And also it appears there was one of those in Knockbride in County Cavan.
No kidding. So interesting.
Yeah, and there was an old tomb which was demolished as well, and it's a fascinating story there, but there was lots more to it than that. I suppose they believe there was druids and all sorts of other things going on at that site. And they even discovered in a bog a skeleton. And they say that was kind of unusual because bogs preserve normally. They preserve the whether it's butter or whether it's a person. And those suggestions was there cannibalism, but we're not going down that road. But I suppose like there was a place in Germany, I think it was, Herxheim or somewhere, that they found cannibalism. Yeah.
Right.
And so they were saying that the people who settled in this area of Knockbride were probably called the beaker folk. They would have used like beakers as part of their utensils and that. They got that name beaker. But they say there's a possibility that there could have been that, but I suppose we don't know whether they had cannibalism or not.
Oh, my goodness. We've gotten a little far afield here. Let me ask you this. You know, the many folks in the U.S. will have an Irish surname, whether it's O'Neill or Kelly or Ryan or whatever, obviously know that they have Irish heritage. What can we tell about where in Ireland someone is from based on their surname, or can we tell anything from that?
Sometimes there are certain names that occur extensively in certain areas, and you could say they had possibly an origin to that area, which might have, like, for example, in West Cavan, the name McGovern is very prevalent. It's a very, very well-known name, and there's a location, Ballymacgovern, at a little town, and I suppose then you've other names like Brady is also a very strong partner name in Calvin. It's a very strong name. And O'Reilly is the chief name in Calvin, I suppose.
Right,
so
right.
People who Riley or O'Reilly can almost definitely say they have a connection back. Now, what generation or century, that's another question. And as the same with other names too, they would have connections to different parts of the country. But I suppose like in terms of you're talking about somebody trying to find their own connection back, I suppose they could start with it from that point of view and see right. if it doesn't lead anywhere. But also the other thing with research, if they can, like whether it's Ellis Island or try and find transport records, does it say on the records where they originated, where where they came from originally. I know some people would have maybe headed to Liverpool and on to the States.
Or, well, and the point, I guess, is the Irish also moved around. I'm told.
There's a great newspaper. The Boston Pilot. I think Boston College has some of those newspapers online, and pre social media, when you could sort of keep in touch with somebody in any part of the world, the Boston Pilot and possibly some other papers too, people would have put an ad in. So if somebody went out to Minnesota and they hadn't been heard of, and say that the sister comes out to the States and she's in Nebraska or so, and she's trying to locate the relative who's in Minnesota, she might put an ad in the Boston Pilot saying,
"No kidding, I haven't heard of that.
Mary Fitzpatrick, trying to seek her brother Thomas Fitzpatrick, let's say, last seen in whatever location, Minnesota." And then somebody might put a thing in the following week saying, "Ah, Thomas Fitzpatrick has moved to New Jersey or somewhere." And
okay.
then that would give her a lead on how to follow up. So
it was a bulletin board of sorts.
Yeah. It's actually very useful. I mean, like for people researching from this side, from Ireland, or for people researching in America, maybe trying to trace something on a family. In fact, I think it's fairly much digitized now on the Boston College website. So
well, that's something I'm going to have to look into. That's a new piece of information.
Newspapers are phenomenal. Like people don't often think of the newspapers, but like we have our collections of newspapers here in Ireland. But also, I see on the New York New York Public Library, there's a great website of newspapers, loc.gov, and they also quite, I'd say, would be very helpful for people. I mean, like you may be able to follow a lead back. Obituaries are phenomenal, you know, to find
absolutely
to unlock further history. And I suppose if you can get a link with who came into the country and try and find what county they came from. But I suppose those transport records or the newspapers might assist with that.
So, Jonathan, does the typical Irish person have any interest in finding their cousins in America or Australia or wherever they might have gone to?
You'll always get, probably get one in the family who will be.
Okay.
You'll get somebody in the family. But then I suppose when somebody has turned up and they say, "Oh, I've discovered such and such a person or there's descendants," I suppose that can interest people, you know.
Right.
But it just depends, I suppose. Like, there are people who will be interested. And I think that in general, the Irish people are very interested in asking people to, you know, if they want to, especially like, I think they like to have them to come back or if they... To forge links with people or communities, that's so important. To forge some sort of a link, you know, whether it's a gathering or whether it's maybe there's something they can do, one can do for the other, whether it's you know, whether it's research or business or whatever, you know.
Whenever I've encountered Irish folks in a bar or whatever, and you have a conversation, and they always will tell you about their visits to America, and that they have cousins in Chicago or Philadelphia, and that's so much fun to hear the Irish folks talk about. Let me offer this. One of my Irish connections is with County Leash. My three times great grandmother was a woman named Ayers. And through the ancestry DNA, I've been able to link up with the Ayers family there in Leash. And when we were in Ireland the last time, we were able to visit there. Very rural, coal mining community in Leash, in the southern part of Leash. They took us to their homes, took us to the churches that the family went to, as you mentioned, the little cottage that still is a shack now, but was where the family lived back in the day. And it added so much to our visit to Ireland, to have that connection with actual family members. The folks were so welcoming.
Enriches your experience, really.
That's the most you can hope for in a visit like that. And
do you know what I would say as well? If you can find the location where they lived, again, people are very generous, and they will want to sort of help you or show where to go, or that's still in Irish people, that thing of that generosity of wanting.
That's been my experience. Absolutely.
But one thing I was going to say is, when you find that location, if the house is still there, say the names of your ancestors when you're in that house, and then think, those people lived here at one time, and you're now back, and you're saying their names. And I don't know whether I believe in, that maybe there's somewhere there that they hear you, or that there's some sort of,
Well, there's definitely a deja vu sort of situation going on when you visit these places.
Yeah.
I will say this too. When we were in Dublin, we went to the National Library.
Yes.
And the folks there were extraordinarily helpful. Now, it is important to make an appointment if you want to talk with one of the genealogy specialists there. But they were able to take the census mapping from the 1910 or 1920 census. They were able to overlay that map with the current Google, aerial photography, and show you exactly where the home place was on the current day-to-day map, which took us to a little spot of land just to the east of Bally James Duff. Where the home is no longer there, but we were definitely there at the place where the Conway family had lived, we would never have isolated it precision without the assistance of that librarian there at the National Library. Wonderful folks.
And that website, there's a website in which you can do that layering of maps, and it's a good one. It's www.osi.ie.
Okay.
Ordnance Survey of Ireland.
Survey of Ireland.
And that's excellent. You may have to just sort of play around with the settings on it at first,
exactly,
familiarize yourself, but you can do that. And also another excellent website. We have the books and the maps. Most libraries will have them, and we do have in Cavan Library. The ordnance, Griffith valuation maps and the Griffith valuation books, which can be found online. There's a great website, askaboutireland.ie, and as a subheading to that, there's Griffith valuation. And Griffith valuation, you can search for family names, locations, localities. If you're looking for, say, like a Bernard McEntee, and you're not entirely sure where he's from, well, but you may have an inkling it was kind of in the Barry James Duff direction or wherever. Mm-hmm. There's a possibility you could narrow it down to some degree, at least. Mm-hmm. Might be able to. It is a very useful. I try that one. Try Griffith valuation. Now, you'll only get the landholder, like say the farmer on the land, that the tenant, you'll not get his family on it. Mm-hmm. But it's for example, like I know my own family's case. I discovered in a particular townland that I was able to find my great grandparents. Grandfather, but I remember I had a stickler of a question over one particular person. I couldn't figure out if he was a son of this great grandfather. But what I figured in the end was, I called into the National Archives in Dublin, and their website is excellent too. The National Archives genealogy website, which is all online now, but at that time it wasn't. And I was going through the calendar of wills, and I discovered that this Samuel Smith was not the son of the person I thought he was. He was actually a nephew.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You sometimes have a little bits of luck like that where you can't figure a piece of the jigsaw. But I always say, hold out.
Understand.
Just make a mental note of that, or make a note of it and as a question mark. But
Irish genealogy is it can be quite difficult because of the lack of records that as they go further back. Mm-hmm. I guess there was a census taken and was lost through a fire at the archives. And
there were certain censuses in the 1880s up to the 1890s that they say some of those were actually intentionally destroyed as well, which is terrible. Then there was a lot of material lost in the fire in 1922. But there's actually a project underway at the moment where they're trying to retrace duplicates of documents that were maybe held in some of the big houses across Britain, or maybe had gone to Canada or even to the States at times. And they're rebuilding that in a digitized format. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's the virtual www.virtualtreasury.ie. So it's virtualtreasury.ie.
So good.
And that is worth looking at. Search that. They're also rebuilding alternative documentation for missing census material. So other sources of names. So that's one to watch. It's being built at the moment, and there's quite a lot of it has been made available. But that definitely out. That's excellent. That's one for you to look at later. I've been trying to get to grips with it. There's a lot of information out. Good information. Well,
Jonathan, I'm going to have to wrap this up. We've gone a little over an hour now, and that's about as much as folks will sit and listen to. I thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing with us your insight into all things Irish heritage. And I encourage my listeners to check out Jonathan Smith on the social media and otherwise. And I'll try to put a link to his publications on the website as we get this posted. Thank you, Jonathan, for your time today.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you.